Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and for 30 years, I have been both the CEO of Technology Partners and the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. I'm delighted to have Jesse Minton on the show today. Jesse is the Vice Chancellor for Technology and Chief Information Officer at Washington University. Well, Jesse, welcome to the Something Extra podcast. I am so happy that we are finally able to make this work. We've been trying for a few months now. Right?
We have. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. Thank you so much.
Oh, I'm excited. I'm excited. So, you know, just, and we're going to talk about this. We're going to do a deeper dive into this, but currently you're the Vice Chancellor for Technology and the CIO of Washington University here in St. Louis. It's a wonderful university with a national reputation for excellence, I think. Very well known across the country. But before that, you were the CIO for the University of Oregon. You came here in 2022. So I'm just going to say We are so lucky, Jesse, seriously, to have you in our region. So I'm so glad you made that move from Oregon to St. Louis because we're lucky to have you.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure. WashU, as you said, is an extraordinary institution. Both personally and professionally, I'm incredibly grateful to be a part of it. And the people are wonderful. And, you know, as you mentioned, it's absolute cutting edge research, clinical care, and education.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, we're going to get into all that. We're going to get into technology. I want to get into leadership. But I'd love for you to take us back to your childhood growing up in Oregon. You grew up in Oregon. Mm-hmm. But what I really want to talk about is you did something pretty special as a child. And I would love to talk about that. And you even have a passion for this today. What did you do? You competed.
Mm-hmm. I did. I still do. So I spent the vast majority of my childhood and teen years and all the way through college competing in equestrian competitions. So hunters and jumpers around the Northwest, up in Canada, down to California. And it's I really thought I was going to ride and train horses professionally until about my senior year in college. And it became clear to me as I really thought it through. And after I had done it at a level as a working student that I would have wanted to do it as a professional, that I needed to have this be my hobby and not my job. But I still have a show horse today. I'm competing this summer in Traverse City, Michigan. And Florida over the winter. And I absolutely adore it. It's a huge part of who I am.
Yes. Well, I know that, I mean, you did, you competed at the highest levels. You know, I'd love to, for you to talk about like, how did that shape your leadership and even how you approach things today? Because there were things that you learned, I'm sure, that you still carry with you today.
Oh, absolutely. You know, riding is a partnership. And especially doing something like asking a horse to be your partner, jump large fences, do that in a way that allows you to be successful, whether that's going fast and leaving the jumps up in the jumpers or doing it in the most lovely, appropriate, beautiful form that the judges will score you highly in the hunters. If you can't make an animal do that, and you don't want to, you want them to want to work with you. You want them to be your partner. You develop a relationship. And, you know, when you go to compete that day, it's a partnership and you're dealing with another entity that has thoughts, feelings, sore muscles, all the things that people do, and you are leading. It's your job to lead, and you have to lead through whatever course you're doing that day, through aches and pains, through maybe they wake up cranky, and figure out how to find a way to work with them that they want to work with you. And to me, that is the crux of what I learned from riding is a great deal of patience, that things don't always go your way. Sometimes you literally have to pick yourself up and figure out how to restart. And when you fail, you should fail fast and fail forward. You can't go to the next jump worried about the fact that the last one went badly. And that's a huge lesson for me in leadership as well. I take that away in terms of how to find a way to make the mission, make the work mutually beneficial for our folks. I want them to be able to see themselves in the work, be passionate about what we're doing, and also see that they can grow and benefit right alongside the university.
That there are so many parallels when I think about it, you know. And the thing that just popped in my head, Jesse, is that old adage, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink.
Yes.
I was
True. It
thinking
is
about
not a
that.
joke.
It's not a joke. I mean, you can't make them do that, right?
No, absolutely. It
So.
is 100% a partnership, and it's a journey. You don't just hop on one day and decide to jump. It is you start with the baby steps, and this building a partnership and training, and a horse learns to jump by first walking over a pole. And you gradually work into all the things and the complexities where you're capable of doing these really complicated things together.
Yeah, that is just so beautiful. And I am sure you truly have taken that into each of your leadership positions as you're leading this team. You know, you just said something like you walk first and then you jump over a low pole. And then, you know, and I'm thinking, and we're going to talk about this, but I'm even thinking about AI, right? And how we roll that out across the enterprise, Jesse. And it's baby steps, right? It's baby steps. So
It is.
we'll dig into that more. But you know, you said that you did bring, like, did you bring one or two of your show horses? You've got Hank
Hank and Ray.
and
So
Ray.
I brought, I brought two of them to St. Louis. Hank is now retired. He is 20, and he spends his days in the pasture with his girlfriend Peaches, and they just enjoy life and eat grass and roll in the mud, and he just gets all the love and the carrots in the world. And my younger horse is Ray, and he's actively competing, and he's 8 years old.
Yeah, it's not time for retirement. He still has to pay his dues,
Oh
right?
gosh, no. Yeah. And he loves his job, and Hank did too. He By the time he's 20, it's just time to not ask him to do it anymore. And they tell you when arthritis and everything else catches up. And Ray is in his prime, and he understands his job, and he's learning more every day, as am I. Make
I
no
love it.
mistake, I learn things every day.
Well, I never competed, but I did grow up with horses, Jesse, because I grew up in Kentucky, and that's equestrian country, right? And
Absolutely.
you know, Greg would say, because Greg really didn't grow up around them, and you know, we would ride a little bit after we got married. And he goes, "I feel so sorry for the horse," you know, like us on the. Am I like, no, they're athletes. And so a few years ago, we were at a dude ranch in Montana. And riding through, you know, like on these cliffs and all this. And it's like really scary, right? But the horse, you got to trust the horse that they're sure footing. I
Yes.
mean, you know, and sometimes I know they fall and stuff, but they don't want to
Absolutely.
fall. They don't want to fall any more than you do, you know? But,
No, not at all.
yeah, wow. Well, let me ask you this, like, because you'd even said that sometimes things don't go so well, you know, they don't go your way. So, how have you taken that, like getting over adversity or getting maybe, you know, you were competing and things did not go the way that you had planned? I mean, how have you taken that lesson? Because sometimes in business, things don't go your way. You know, how have you taken that to
Absolutely.
overcome that?
I think that there is a an aspect of you have to figure out how to mitigate the situation you find yourself in right now. And you know, that might mean that we have to stop and pause and reassess and try again. It might mean that we need to, in the terms of a project, really be honest with ourselves about what's happening, put new processes in place and figure it out. And then you, once that immediate moment of intensity, maybe is the right word for it, is over, there's an obligation to reflect and to say, how did we get here? What is it that we need to put in place to the best of our ability to prevent this from happening again? And that's very much something that I see in business as well. And it's not just in technology. For me, it is the crux of being service oriented. You know, when you make a mistake with a customer, we have to start with owning it. We absolutely have to own the issue, be accountable, don't make excuses, don't give reasons, and talk about what we're going to do immediately to fix it, and then what we're going to do to resolve it and prevent it from happening again. And it's very interesting. There's a great deal of research around customer loyalty and engagement that if you never have an issue, your customer is actually a slightly less loyal to you than if you had a problem and you were accountable and you solved it in a really compelling way that made them increase their trust. And for me, that applies to the gamut of what it is that we do as leaders. Things are not always going to go well. And that's sort of the unexpected. The other piece of it, you know, kind of tying it back to AI, is we don't know everything about what's happening with generative AI and LLMs, and even how they learn isn't necessarily super well understood. We need to find ways to implement fail in small controlled areas, learn from it, and that failing forward. How do we fail, learn, and go forward? Because if the other piece of it is if our teams are afraid to fail, they won't take calculated risks. And we sacrifice innovation, we sacrifice achievement, and you sacrifice that environment where they feel confident. And that to me is a tremendous shame.
Yeah. Oh, I completely agree. You've got to make it a safe place, right, for them to try and experiment because innovation won't happen otherwise. So
Absolutely.
that's a great point. Well, let me ask you this. Have you, I'm going to use equestrian terms, but it like in your leadership, have you ever like fallen off the horse, so to speak? And then, and
Sure.
then what
I,
did
I
you,
think that we all have.
yeah. And what did you learn from that? And it kind of ties into what you just said too, you know, that you take a moment and pause and
Yep, absolutely. So I'll tell a story where I stubbed my toe pretty significantly when my first foray into the mission-driven environment. So, you know, as you know, Lisa, I spent the first little more than a decade of my career in the publicly traded environment, very corporate, very command and control. You know, those environments, you have to be able to report to your shareholders, talk about earnings, talk about what you're doing in the next quarter. And, you know, so for example, when I was at Yahoo, we had processes and the ability to pivot very quickly in place because if we're going to make 15,000 people around the globe change direction in order to achieve something for the next quarter, that's a really, we have to communicate, expect that the changes happen and go. And that was really the environment that I grew up in as a leader. When I went into the mission-driven environment for the first time at Oregon Health and Science University, I had this shocking moment where I realized that that isn't how it works in those environments. And there aren't accepted sort of mandates and pivots that happen. So I had been asked to build a project management organization. This was my I reported to the CIO and I was running one of six divisions for OHSU. And we had the project management organization had been dismantled. It wasn't working several years earlier during 08, 09 downturn. And I was rebuilding it. We started with this notion that everyone needed a base level of project management training. And I sent out a note to the leadership team essentially saying, you know, this is our new required methodology. Required training. Here's how your folks can sign up. Please support me in doing this. And I had a colleague send me a note that said that I had deeply offended his management team. And I was absolutely floored. You know, I had this physical reaction that I had offended them. And I reread my email and I thought, oh my gosh, what did I do? And so I went down the hall and had a chat with him. And he said, well, you know, you said that this was mandatory and required. You know, those words were very aggressive for this environment. We generally don't use them unless it is something that is legally compliance based. And that was such a big learning moment for me. And it was something that I was able to take forward, but it also, I had some repair work to do because I had entirely unintentionally based my frame of reference in a previous culture. I hadn't paid enough attention to the culture that I was in and placed myself in a situation where my new program was being viewed poorly by a handful of managers because of the way I'd communicated. And that really stuck with me. And it was something that I learned from very quickly, and that I'm probably potentially oversensitive to it, but it's something that I think that especially in technology, we have to communicate well. And if we don't, we lose it. You know, the technology part is not the hard part. It's the implementation, the adoption, the understanding of what we're trying to do, and meeting people where they are with a solution that meets their needs. And if we can't communicate, we're lost.
Wow, that's this what you just said. There's so much gold that's packed in there, Jesse. Because here's the thing, you were coming in with a preconceived notion of how you had experienced it before. So there's lesson one, make sure you're reading the room, understand the culture, and then just our language, right? So how would he have preferred you do that? Suggested, not mandatory, but suggested
I,
training and
you know,
methodology?
in when I went back and edited it and I resent it and I just simply removed the word mandatory and I just said, this is our new project management methodology and training materials. I'm asking for your support as we move forward. You know, it's our goal to have everyone in the organization have gone through the basics class by X date, you know, and so just kind of changing that to a little bit of a different tone. And then also realizing that in the mission-driven environment, and this has held true everywhere I've been, Oregon Health and Science University, when I became the CIO at the University of Oregon, and here at WashU, you have to do your own legwork in a lot of these things in order to get adoption of what it is that you need. You know, we have teams that will go out and do organizational change management work with the departments and with the schools and colleges because it is necessary for us to understand how they're using it, make sure that they understand where we're going. If we rely on the departments to figure out that change management adoption, you're kind of toast. And that was the other thing I took away from that is we would do the, hey, has everyone signed up? Has everyone gone? The outreach to the managers and to say, we've got these four people who haven't signed up for training yet. Can you please help us get them into a class? Whereas in the publicly traded environment, you just send a report to say, these people haven't attended. Please fix it.
Right. Exactly. Oh, that is so good. I love that. Sometimes we learn more from those missteps sometimes, I think, right?
Certainly.
And look at it that way, that it's a learning opportunity. Let's talk about leadership a little bit more here, and then I want to get into WashU. We'll take a quick break and then we'll get into WashU. But I kind of skipped over kind of what you're doing today. But at the age of 22, Jesse, you were given responsibility for managing a call center at the age of 22.
It was
So
a little terrifying.
I was gonna say it would be 20. I'm thinking back to when I was 22. Yeah, but what do you think helped? And you were very successful in it and went on to, be promoted after that. What do you think, and you probably can tie it back to some things that you did in your childhood, what do you think gave you the confidence to step into that leadership role when you've never had done anything like that before?
I think part of it's my personality. I am eternally optimistic. I tend to look for the upside and assume that things are going to go well and then go about executing with that assumption in mind. That doesn't mean that we can be Pollyanna about it, but I tend to go about things assuming that we can find the best outcome if we work together. And that's just kind of fundamentally part of me. And I'm sure that had to do with I've always been pretty brave and I've been willing to try new things, whether that, means that you end up in the dirt or you fall down and break an arm or whatever, all of those things that you experience as a
Right.
kid. And it was scary. I was given this opportunity and I had worked in the call center in college. I sort of had some ad hoc part-time job to fill in stuff. And so I knew the role and I knew how to do the job as an individual, which really, really helped because I wasn't worried about not knowing how to actually. I could pick up the phone right beside any of the call center reps and connect an interpreter to a doctor in the midst of a medical appointment. The piece that I didn't have any idea is how to manage toward metrics, how to manage a team that we need to make sure that we are, when poison control calls and you don't know whether the non-English speaking person on the other end has a child that drank bleach or ate crayons, like we have to have a sense of urgency and process to get that right. And I was really fortunate that I was given a management coach and consultant, and I learned how to create metrics, build them, how to work with my team. And I also figured out at this point a key tenet of what I carry with me leadership philosophy wise today, which is that authenticity is huge. I truly believe that as leaders, and I think it's even more true the more senior you become as a leader, your team has to believe in you. And in order to believe in you, they have to believe that you're genuine. And there's a big piece of that. When you ask folks to come along with you and to do things, our jobs did not mean that we're going to make everyone happy all the time. But if they believe in you, that you have the best interests of the institution, of the team, and they know you a little, I think that that's huge. And I learned that with that team. I would come in on third shift at 2 a.m. and check on my team because it was a small enough organization that there was one manager and three shifts and 25 people. And I can't tell you how much I learned in that job and how it was such a terrifying and incredible opportunity all at once. And my advice to someone who has an opportunity like that is when you get that kind of opportunity, you take it
Take it.
and it's okay to be scared. And then you have
Right.
to figure out how to create success.
Yeah. That's so good. Because I think a lot of people think, right, Jesse, they think, oh, this person, they're not scared. They're just so
Right.
courageous and there's not fear. But there is, but you
For
channel
sure.
that fear in the right way. And,
Absolutely.
so that is so good. I love that. Well, let me ask you this one question, then we're going to take a quick break. Was there a single turning point in your journey where you knew that tech leadership was your path and what you wanted to do? Because you kind of had an unconventional start. We didn't talk about that, but you have a degree in
Absolutely.
anthropology, and it wasn't like you went and got a computer science degree. What
Right.
was there a turning point, and what was that precipice, would you say, where you said, I,
Yes.
this is my path?
Absolutely. So, as you had mentioned, my first management job was leading this call center that did medical interpretation 24/7. And I was sort of in the customer service space as a leader. I worked for what is now a part of Change Healthcare after that. And I started to get some technical groups. One of the things that gave me some technical background was that interpretation company. When I joined, we were in the middle of both an office move and a major technology migration. And I mentioned that, the organization was small. So we had zero IT. We had one consultant who did desktop stuff. And we had hired this company to implement the software. And that meant somebody had to learn how to administer it, how to administer the telephony and the switches. And that someone turned out to be me. And so I got that hands-on experience through that journey as well. And I really was good at it. And I liked that too. And I thought, gosh, this is amazing what we can do to help these non-English speaking patients get access to care through technology and connecting them with people who speak their language, which was really cool. And then fast forward, gosh, a decade, I guess, or more, I completed my master's degree in a more business relevant field at this point because I had figured out that leadership was what made me tick. So I got a master's in management and organizational leadership while I was working at Yahoo. And I completed that, was starting to look for the next step. And by the time I got to the end of my tenure at Yahoo, I knew I wanted to be in an executive leader role. I didn't really know what that looked like. I'd had this kind of varied path of customer service, search marketing, small business with Yahoo, electronic bill payment presentment, revenue cycle work, and then this medical interpretation piece. And I was recruited to this role at Oregon Health and Science University in the IT department reporting to the CIO, which I'd never done before. And it was this phenomenal fit to the things that I'd done in the past. It had some Lean Six Sigma performance process improvement pieces. It had customer service. It had running the finances and also some technical leadership. And I got in the door and I figured out a couple of things. One was leading in the mission-driven environment is incredibly powerful. We have this really cool opportunity to take technology, use it as a force multiplier for the mission, for advancing research, advancing the next generation of educators, of clinicians, and taking care of patients all at the same time. And I saw my opportunity to do that in an executive seat in the CIO. And that was the moment for me where it all kind of clicked. And I really focused my next development steps around that notion.
Oh, that's so good. Well, I'm just thinking as you're talking, I mean, the mission driven, because we say, like, one of our taglines is we're harnessing the power of technology to improve the world, because it really does. But when you're talking like things like
Absolutely.
patient outcomes and things like that, where technology is being used, oh my goodness, Jesse, there's just so much satisfaction in that, isn't there? I mean, when you know.
It's incredibly rewarding.
It's incredibly rewarding. Yeah, that's so good. Well, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Jesse Minton on the Something Extra podcast.
In business, the tendency is to seek out partners who are bigger, faster, stronger. When it comes to IT, you should be looking for smarter, faster, better. That's just what you'll find with the talented technologists at Technology Partners. Our experts develop custom solutions to tackle your most complex challenges, all to simplify your processes in the smartest, most efficient way possible. The time to be swift and nimble starts now. Go to technologypartners.net/solutions and see what's possible.
Well, welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with Jesse Minton. So, Jesse, now you started when you were 12. Okay, I'm just going to preface it with that. But you've been in IT leadership for close to 20 years, but you started when you were 12. So, you're still very, very young. But I know one thing is for sure. One thing is for sure, Jesse, you've seen a lot of change. You've seen a lot of change, right? We've been doing this for 31 years and we've seen a lot of change. But in those seasons of change, and that's one thing that we say, you just, if you're in technology, you just got to get used to change because change is coming. And so embrace the
Yes.
change. But how do you personally, as a leader, help your team stay grounded and confident during these big seasons of change? Are there certain tactics that you use or leadership tenets that you employ when that happens?
Absolutely. So, we talked a little bit about authenticity. The sort of the three pillars around which I think about my leadership philosophy are authenticity, making an environment, creating a welcoming environment where our teams can see themselves and that they can feel that they can thrive and do their best work. And that translates into the third tenet, which is a high degree of accountability and outcomes and focus on mission, which means that we have to have everyone understand how the pieces that they do, their role, fit into the bigger picture. And a big way that I do that helps, I think, when we encounter change or turbulent times is having a set of principles and values and goals. So when I joined WashU, it was a wonderful moment to do that for IT. Our Here and Next strategic plan had just been launched in the fall of 22. And so at that point, I was 5 or 6 months in. I had gotten my feet on the ground, done the listening tour, and really started working with the IT team to build a strategic plan that we call Impact that aligns behind the 10-year Here and Next plan. And part of that is a set of principles, values, aspirational stakeholder experiences, and those things shouldn't change. You know, even though we're dealing with turbulence right now, go back to 2008, 2007, when we really experienced a pretty traumatic recession. Who we are from a philosophical standpoint, our mission, vision, values shouldn't change if we've built them right. And we may adjust our goals as the goalposts shift, but having that clear understanding of who we are, how we go about the work, what makes us special, and what it is that we are here to do, I think is really powerful to help folks focus around that. And we can't assume that people remember. You know, we've got to communicate. And a piece of the authenticity for me is, you know, I'll stand in front of my team and say, hey, this is hard. Like, I know that this is really difficult right now. It's difficult for all of you. It's difficult for me. I don't feel that I have all the answers. Here's what I know right now based on what I understand. And here's how I would like us to go about dealing with this together. And I've really taken that approach throughout my career when we've hit either just really transformational change, like generative AI, or when we've hit things like a recession and we have to deal with a really changing landscape and changing conditions and financial environments as well. And I think you have to be very visible, very present. And that looks really different now, I think, than it did pre-pandemic. You know,
Yes.
we're not in a studio recording this podcast, and we would have been pre-pandemic, right?
That's right.
The IT organization has shifted to a hybrid model where we can hire folks across the nation who are the best at what it is that we need. But that means we have to lead differently. And you have to think about the fact that your culture, what your culture was when it was fully in person, is not the culture that you have when you move remote. And you have to figure out how to then protect it, build the aspects that you want. And it's very much about clear communication at all levels of the organization, giving your team, your managers, your leaders, those skills to do the same thing, doing lunch and listens, creating those virtual environments where folks have the ability to ask questions, even if we don't have all the answers, and being honest and genuine and visible.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Well, and then your third pillar was accountability. In those remote environments, you can't just pop into someone's office, right? You have to have those accountability systems in place. That's really good. Well, let's turn our attention to what you're currently doing today at WashU. And you've already talked about it. I love that you talked about you did the listening tours. You really got clear on, mission, vision, purpose, the culture of your IT organization at WashU, and getting everybody pointed in the same direction, making sure that everybody understands what you're trying to accomplish. But what have some, been some of the other initiatives, Jesse, that you've had since you came in 2022? Let's,
Sure. So
that.
I the earliest one that we really launched with a great deal of intention was a cybersecurity program that we have branded Cybear. So WashU Bears. And so our Cybear Secure program is a multi-year process for us to raise our cybersecurity maturity level under the National Institutes of Standards and Technology cybersecurity framework. And it's a really interesting dynamic environment because, of course, we have our Danforth campus that is, for the listeners can think about as a very traditional university campus, strong liberal arts, research, all of the things that you think of as university. And we also have our academic medical center, and I have the absolute privilege of leading IT for both. But what that means is we have to think about how to tailor cybersecurity for a protected health information medical environment, which is a much more specific, tightly controlled environment from a regulatory perspective. And then also create the ability for us to have wide open collaboration in research. And this program has been, we have done literally hundreds of projects over the last 4 years, everything from moving on to a 24/7 security operations center with partners that allowed us when the CrowdStrike incident happened, we
Yes.
responded to it. It showed up in our logging like a cybersecurity breach, and we responded as such, and we were really fortunate that we had it affect, less than 400 servers in our environment, and we were back up and running and fully remediated inside of like 3 hours. And that was all because we had done all of this work in the cyberspace. It was a huge investment on behalf of the university, and I'm incredibly grateful that we had that level of trust. We tied it back to the mission. We tied it back to our strategic plan and spent an awful lot of time doing the legwork with folks about why we're doing this and why it's important. And because it results in change, those we just talked about, change to the university, change to policies, change how we manage things to ensure the security and integrity of the institution. So that's been really fun.
Aren't you so glad, Jesse, though, that you'd started that work and
Yes.
when the crowd started? I mean, honestly, that's another wonderful leadership principle is the preparation. Making sure that you're doing the legwork to be prepared when something like that does happen. Because you
Absolutely.
always hear that old adage, it's not like if, it's when,
It's when,
right? It's
absolutely. And
when.
hope is not a strategy.
Right. Exactly. That's good. Well, tell me what, and you can talk about AI and kind of, I'd love to hear, how you guys, your thoughts around it, how you guys are rolling it out across the enterprise. How are you getting your, are there certain function areas that you have found that have been where it's really been kind of a game changer? I mean, what's your thoughts around all of that?
In our environment, it is incredibly dynamic and diverse. And I think that that is the key to understanding how AI should roll out in a mission-driven environment is that it's very different in the clinical space than it is in the academic space and the research space and the administrative space. We have arguably made, I would say, the most current progress in the clinical space. We've done some physician efficiency things that have been really interesting with what you call ambient notes. So we've piloted a couple of different products and we're in the process of selection around. So if I'm a patient and I go into my doctor's office, they ask my permission to just take your iPhone and record the session. And the technology then turns that into a physician note. And it's saving some physicians 3 and 4 hours of documentation time a day. And that means they can spend more time with patients. They're less burned out. They're not at home trying to remember all of this at night and do their documentation. And that's kind of meat and potatoes of what some of this technology could do. Some of the other really extraordinary things that are happening in the research space. There's a particular variety of ductal breast cancer in which a large percentage of patients don't require treatment, but the percentage, and don't quote me exactly in the numbers, but it's something like 70% of patients don't require treatment, and the other 30% absolutely do, or it's fatal. But up until when researchers started using artificial intelligence to analyze millions of breast images, and found a marker that differentiated, physicians didn't know which group was which. And so everyone had to be treated. So 70% of those patients were having to go through incredibly invasive and challenging treatments in order to make sure that that 30% that we didn't know who is who, was treated. And now they've used artificial intelligence to identify markers in imaging that know, and they're going down the path of validating which patient group is which is, it's an example of the game-changing nature of how we can use this technology for things. So I'm incredibly excited. We're doing some cool things in the administrative space, looking at, contract management life cycle and how do we make sure that we're using generative AI to make sure that our contracts and the billing are in compliance, that we don't wait too long to renegotiate. There's some really cool, good efficiency cost savings things that are available out there. And then our researchers, we have folks who have been, we talked at the top before we started recording, AI has been around for a very long time, and generative AI has become at the forefront in the public eye. And we have folks that have been in this space their entire career. And so we have really tremendous research happening. Our instructors are starting to use it with our students in new ways. And our role, I see as the IT department, is to create that enabling infrastructure upon which our brilliant folks can do their work and engage in discovery and learning and patient care, and to create that environment in which we have it segmented in such a way that we have the security right, so that we have it secure where it absolutely needs to be, and that we educate our faculty so that they make sure that they know where their intellectual property is going using generative AI tools, and we don't inadvertently provide those data to someone we don't mean to.
Yes, for sure. Those are some remarkable case studies, seriously. And I love what you described on the certain type of breast cancer, because I'm thinking you're increasing the patient experience. There's also an economic play there, right, Jesse? I mean, if you don't have to go through
Absolutely.
treatment, why do that?
Right. We talk
Healthcare
about the costs of
costs,
healthcare
the cost
and
of healthcare, and that's one way to, make sure that we keep that in line. That's so good. Well, let me ask you two more questions, and then I want to talk about something extra. So I know that in talking to you, that mentorship has been really important to you. And you had even said that you had, I believe, a management coach, an executive coach in the one role, which is awesome. But if you think about a mentor or two, are there some things that were said to you, even as a young professional, that you still like carry forward with you today?
I realized when you asked that question that I said one of them while we were here, which is hope is not a strategy, Jesse. I reported to a vice president at this was in the private sector in Change Healthcare, and we were or what is now, we were dealing, I don't even remember what the business challenge was, but it was something that we knew might get really unpleasant, might be really challenging. And Bill said to me, so, how are we going to handle this? And I started to say the words, well, we're going to hope that. And he just looked at me and he said, hope is not a strategy, Jesse. And I looked at him and I was like, it was one of those glass breaking moments for me, and it sticks with me. The other thing that I think that I've learned from leaders that I've admired is that, best isn't the enemy of better, right? We have to make progress, and if we spend so much time trying to make it exactly perfect, we're going to miss the opportunity to have made progress in the meantime. And it doesn't mean we can't keep working on it. And I think, that clarity of communication and what are we going to accomplish now? What are we going to work on next is important. And I would say the third piece of it is setting expectations. And what I talk about is controlling your own destiny. I want to empower our folks and our leaders to control our own destiny in terms of our success. And what do I mean by that? That means every interaction we have, whether we're ordering someone a new monitor in our hardware depot, or we are implementing new modules of a cutting-edge software product, we've got to communicate what we're going to do, when we're going to do it, and what's the scope of it, and when we're going to get back to people. And if you do that, you can control their experience and how they view your service and your credibility. If you don't, the chances of them making up in their head what they think ought to happen next, matching what reality is, if you don't talk about it and agree on it, are just vanishingly small, and you have created failure for yourself right out of the gate. And I would say those are three big things that to me are not technology specific. It's about leadership and how to really make sure that you are working with your stakeholders and that they understand, and so do you.
That is so good. That is gold. That is gold. Well,
Excuse me.
Jesse, I know in 2024, and I'm just going to do a little shout out here just to tell our listeners. I mean, you were an Orbi winner in 2024 for large enterprise.
Thank you.
Yeah, so congratulations again on
Very
that.
honored.
Yes, I know. And I know that what you would say about this, but I
Thank
just
you.
it wasn't just Jesse Minton. It's a team award, right?
No,
It's a team award.
it's absolutely. I mean, it's a recognition on behalf of the incredible work from our team at WashU IT.
Yeah. So, well, very good. Well, let me ask you now. I could put words in your mouth on this. I usually the question is that I always ask is what do you believe is something extra that every leader needs? And I want you to answer that question. But if you were to say what your something extras are, Jesse Minton, what do you think they are? And I mean, I could put some words in your mouth. I'm going to give you one, courage.
Okay.
I think courage. I also think adaptability for you and this positive mindset, not a Pollyanna, but the pos I think
Right.
positivity goes a long way. And when we were talking about hope is not a strategy, yeah, I mean, you hope is not a strategy, but you can still have positivity in whatever it is that
100%.
you're doing, right?
Absolutely. For sure.
So.
You know, I think those are probably right. I'm a relatively persistent person. And I think for me, I'm hard to discourage, and that comes with the optimism and the adaptability. And if something doesn't necessarily work, I am well, that doesn't mean it's not going to. It just means we learned one way not to do it. And so I think for me, it is. I am optimistic by nature. I am very persistent. And I think for something that every leader needs is you've got to figure out how to have fun and be you. And you know, and that probably goes back to my thing about authenticity, is that what it means to me isn't the same as what it needs to mean to someone else, and neither one is right or wrong. But if you can find out how to be you as a leader, let that shine through in your leadership and have a good time. You know, not that we all don't have bad days where you'd rather put a pen in your eye because it would be less painful,
Right.
but having a good time and loving what you do and figuring out how that ties into who you are and letting that show, I think is it really important for something extra that every leader could use.
I agree because guess what? That's contagious. And if you're not having a good time, your team is probably not
Yeah.
going to be having a good time either because they are looking to you and how you approach things and how you approach challenges and they're looking to you for that. And so if they see you not really enjoying whatever it is that you're doing, they probably aren't either.
For sure.
So I do think that's contagious. That's a good one. Well, Jesse, this has been so much fun. Thank you so
It has.
much. This is
Thank you, Lisa.
Yeah, it was just good to spend this time with you, but I cannot wait for our listeners to learn from you. So thank you again so much.
Thank you so much. It was great to see you.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.